If you haven't already, explore the many ways to connect with our show. Watch full uncut conversations on YouTube, gain AIA-approved continuing education credits through Arcademy, and make sure to check us out and follow us on social media at Detailed Podcast. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
I look at everything differently. I look at hotel, where I go and stay on a trip. I'm looking, why in the world would they have done that now? You know, I'm looking at things in a whole new set of lenses. You know, it's completely changed me. And I just had a blind spot for it. And so everyone should be included when we think about design. And I'm applying that mindset everywhere I go now. It's completely changed me.
You know, just that whole sense of that humanity aspect of inclusion and experience, you know, and to be this far into my career and to have that kind of eye-opening educational experience and the chance to really change the world through this project and beyond is irreplaceable.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, senior specification writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guests today are Joe Haas, VP of Advancement and the Dodd Experience, and Chris Carmichael of PLC Management. Joe is a nonprofit leader known for advancing accessibility, community engagement, and organizational transformation across the arts, education, and cultural sectors. As Vice President of Advancement for the Dot Experience, she is leading the new attraction that will reshape public understanding of blindness and disability through immersive tactile learning. Her work reflects a career-long commitment to creativity and redefining inclusion in practice. Chris Carmichael is the owner of PLC Management, Kentucky's most experienced owner's representative and project delivery firm. Notable past and present projects include Rupp Arena and Central Bank Center renovation, Louisville Belvedere renovation, Speed Art Museum, Jewish Community Center, Galt House Hotel, 21C Hotels in Whiskey Row. He is the former president, COO and partner of DMK Development Group, a healthcare developer and construction manager, and the former president of Brown Jordan, the world's largest manufacturer and distributor of luxury outdoor furnishings. The project we're talking about today is the Dot Experience, located in Louisville, Kentucky. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. Scheduled to open in 2026, the Dot Experience is conceived as both a museum and an architectural framework for inclusion. Reimagined by the American Printing House for the Blind, architecture here is not a neutral container, but an active participant in reshaping how blindness and access more broadly is understood.
We are almost a 180-year-old organization, if you can believe it or not, and we are the largest organization developing, providing, we do some printing, of materials for the classroom for students in the K-12 environment who are blind and low vision. So we're headquartered in Louisville, Kentucky, and we provide those resources and those materials. Some of them are technologies, Some of them are Braille books, large print text to students, blind and low vision students in every classroom across the country, wherever those materials are needed. As I mentioned, the organization has been around the block. We've been focused on leveling the playing field in classrooms all over the country, you know, basically standing up and saying, children who are blind and low vision have every bit of the same potential as every other child in every other classroom. And we've spent decades actually teaching people how to level that playing field, how to break down barriers, how to lift people up to their full potential. And so when the opportunity arose, and I can let Chris take a little bit of the practical answer to this, I think the organization said, you know, why not take the bully pulpit that we have in the education space and expand it to a larger playing field, you know, take it out to the public and work to change perspectives about blindness and disability with that broader public.
The museum's name pays homage to the six-dot system of Braille, a language that underpins literacy, independence, and empowerment.
Braille is a system of six dots. One of the things that I didn't know until I started with this project is that those same six dots that were invented by Louis Braille, actually back a few years after the printing house was founded, make every letter, number, science symbol, and music note. So they're a very versatile but very simple symbol of literacy and lifelong learning. And printing Braille is one of our, you know, bread and butter business units, right? And so we said, you know, how do we create something for the general public that can be a demonstration space about inclusivity and accessibility, that can tell the story about blindness and the human experience, can elevate and celebrate Braille, but be provocative and interesting with whatever name we attach to it. And so thus was born the Dot Experience, you know, something that you might see if you're visiting town for a few days, or you might read about in a travel magazine or hear about on an architecture podcast and say, you know, that seems like something I'm interested in visiting because it has that little edge to it. But then it also has, of course, some deeper learning and deeper meaning attached.
The project expands the institution's original museum to nearly five times its size, transforming it into a destination that blends exhibition, factory tour, and educational center.
So we are dealing with an existing 280,000 square foot facility that's a mix of manufacturing and office space, and had a very modest museum. What's interesting about this scope was that existing facility was composed of 15 additions to the original 1883 building. So it's literally like Legos being stacked around this original building. And they come from many different decades with many different design standards, many different construction methodologies over the course of each and every one of these additions. So you're starting there, you had a lot you were dealing with. And what we were trying to do ultimately, we started off, the original scope was we wanted to build a museum. And over time, it has evolved. The scope has evolved over the years. And what we're about to finish finally next year, we'll be renovating about 80,000 of that 280,000 square feet. Plus, we're adding a 20,000 square foot addition at the front of the facility. And that is where the portion of the museum will be housed and showcased. So it's the front door. But we're also going to be basically modernizing their work environments. So at the end, it's 100,000 square feet of about 70,000 is modernizing their work environment, new office spaces, new workspaces, things of that nature. And about 30,000 of it is the museum. And that museum is broken down. It will take over the entire 20,000 square foot addition plus 10,000 of existing space to make up the 30.
From the outset, the design is driven by an unprecedented application of inclusive design standards, positioning accessibility as the project's primary architectural logic, Rather than retrofitting accommodations, the DOT experience embeds inclusivity into the spatial DNA of the project.
I love that we're having conversations about this. And I love that the question begins with the suggested parsing apart of ADA and applied inclusive design standards, because I think that's exactly what we are trying to do. We are trying to use the DOT experience project to push boundaries and to say, it's one thing to make sure that you have a ramped entryway. It's an entirely different thing when that ramped entryway is all the way on the side of the building, one level down from where everyone else is going in, you know, which is reality in a lot of places, you know, such and thus museum in Chicago, you know, you go up a beautiful flight of ceremonial stairs to get to the front desk. If you're in a wheelchair, you go down the block, around the block, into the basement, up an elevator, you cross a whole lobby, you run into the back of the, you know, the middle of the line, not the back of the line. You don't know where you're supposed to get your ticket, but that is an accommodation, right? So that is ADA accessible. What we've done instead is to say, what if we embrace this idea of welcome everyone at its most primal level? You know, what if we say, everyone gets a chance to be themselves, experience everything we have to offer in as autonomous, parallel, simultaneous a way as possible, without having to raise their hand and declare that they're autistic or blind or too big to fit in a chair or in need of a, you know, some mobility support. And so we spent probably a whole year hammering out a phone book sized set of ideal standards that addressed everything you can think of, you know, the basics, lighting, navigation, things like signage and wayfinding, but also some things you might not think about: high contrast, flexible seating, you know, the idea of going one step further to have an elevator that can take multiple wheelchairs instead of just, you know, one wheelchair. So if a family is coming or a school group is coming and they have a couple of kids in a wheelchair, they can all go on the elevator together. The kinds of things that go beyond just the basics and that use this word othering in a very disciplined way, you know, to avoid othering. You know, every single conversation we have about how people will get into the space, how folks will navigate the space, how people will gain access to information, how they can move about the space, be comfortable in the space, all of those things are pivoting from the vision of welcoming everyone in a manner that doesn't other anyone.
A key component of the design process is an ongoing prototyping model. Individuals who are blind or low vision, have limited mobility, or represent diverse accessibility needs regularly test the building components, offer direct feedback on lighting conditions, flooring textures, transitions, wayfinding, and restroom design.
One of the things that's been consistent throughout this whole project and was just further exemplified in the prototyping process was that we're really doing something that no one's done before and that Printing House has not done before, Solid Light has not done before.
This is Chris Mosier, Chief Operating Officer at Solid Light, who provided the exhibit design and fabrication for the project.
I think all of us who were part of that went in pretty humbly and eager to learn and explore and then, you know, expand upon and make better. And so each kind of step of the way through, like even through our design process, we learned how to present deliverables differently. One of the unique aspects of this project is that not only is the output of the final product being the museum highly focused on being the most accessible museum, but the process that we've been going through has had to be accessible as well. And so like when we have been delivering creative deliverables, which are, you know, historically from like a design firm, are largely visual, photorealistic renders at certain points. How do we make those accessible to a stakeholder group that is low-sighted, has blind individuals, has all the gamut of sightedness, and making sure that everyone has an equal experience and equal access to that information? So as we've been thinking about the prototyping group, it's been really that same kind of mantra and mindset of like, we're going to try a thing, we know we're going to be wrong, and they're going to tell us how we're wrong and how we can improve on it. And then we're going to enact that and take, you know, version 2.0 and 3.0 and make each one different. I think for the prototyping group specifically, the success of that has been largely on the fact that we've got people who are interested in giving us their honest, transparent feedback. And a large group of that group as a whole, it's not usually asked for their feedback. They're not usually included in evaluations of, well, does this work or not? A lot of the project has been put on the foundation of accessibility and inclusive first. And a lot of projects, not just museum or exhibit design projects, but a lot of projects have a more additive approach. Like, we're gonna figure it out and then we'll add in the accessibility later. And I think that's one thing that's very unique to this project that the prototyping group has been integral in, is that we've taken that kind of accessibility and inclusive design first mantra, and then they've come in and kind of checked us along the way and making sure that that's, you know, held and being exemplified in the exhibits themselves.
The exterior renovation blends modernity with historical precedent, utilizing cement panels and a glazed facade that echo the building's character while opening views to the surrounding Clifton neighborhood.
Well, the exterior building materials were selected with the intention to provide a modern, but I would say sympathetic entry experience for the organization. I mean, APH is innovative at its core, and the exterior really seeks to reflect that. We've got modularity and warmth through cement panels, forming the context of the surrounding. We got this Clifton neighborhood that I mentioned earlier, and so we needed it to fit in, but also to say we're doing something different here. We don't want to stick out like a sore thumb, but we want you to know we're different. The glass on the facade seeks to activate the area surrounding the building through views and enhance the occupant experience of daylight by allowing daylight to flow into the building. So it's been a real trick of sort of paying homage to the old, but bringing in the new and showcasing that we're different and we like being different. So we think we've come up with a very beautiful design.
The interior is organized within a spatial sequence that encourages exploration through multiple senses, reinforcing the idea that knowledge is not solely visual. In addition to this, all of the unique spaces have been reimagined to reflect this inclusive design.
Well, when you walk in the front door from Frankfort Avenue, you'll be in that 20,000 square foot new addition. So a brand new modern space. It is literally floor to ceiling, two floors high, and it's wide open, straight up to the ceiling. So this large, just very generous ceiling, and it's going to grab you right when you walk in. And then as you start to meander into the building, into the museum experience, you start to enter into those renovated areas. So you're going from new to old, and we're trying to do so in a way that we're not trying to mask or change what we were. And we've done that in various places throughout the facility, even in the offices, like in the fourth floor office spaces. We found things as we were in this building, and instead of just demolishing them, we sort of honored them. You know, we had existing brick walls in the basement that we didn't know were there, believe it or not, because they had drywall on them, and we doing selective demo just didn't choose to demo that wall and see what was behind it. And lo and behold, it was masonry. Well, instead of getting rid of it, we showcased some of it.
And one step better than that, to your point about leaning into touch, that sort of universal sense, right? We all sort of have the the sense of touch, and that's touch is how we learn. We went in and scanned a bunch of these architectural features that will be part of the tactile graphic array in the lobby. So the lobby really becomes, as Chris said, APH's new front door. So if you're coming in for a business meeting or a job interview, or you're coming to visit the Dot Experience, you're coming into that front door space and that lobby space. And we have an installation in that area that's a little bit like a corporate visitor center, right? It's the tip of the iceberg. So you don't have to buy a ticket to the Dot Experience to experience the exhibits in that particular lobby zone. The power of touch, the power of people, the power of Braille. So we're even using some of those architectural elements to really enhance visitor experience in that lobby. Part of the impetus for doing this project was a collaboration with American Foundation for the Blind, and they use the acronym AFB, and we are the stewards of the AFB Helen Keller Archive. So all of Helen Keller's personal effects that were being kept by AFB in a warehouse somewhere near New York are now housed at APH and will be part of the visitor experience. So there's a whole gallery that celebrates, you know, really the sort of badassery of Helen Keller. You know, a lot of people think of Helen as a little girl at the water pump or an old lady traveling the world, but she was, you know, a woman really committed to workers' rights, women's rights, the rights of the disabled, the rights of Black people, and racial equity. And so we're telling the Helen story as a part of the Dot Experience. I think that's a place you're going to get lost, is in that space. You're going to be able to be near her desk, read her words. Yeah, it's going to be very powerful. And then a lot of technology, a lot of the evolution of how does Braille get printed? How does it get digitized? How do we educate kids in classrooms early on in the history of educating blind children all the way up to today? So that is all part of that visitor experience.
Up at the top of the building, we've got a sort of a boardroom situation. It's actually an area to bring in visitors to do many things. And it walks out onto a rooftop terrace that overlooks downtown Louisville. It is gorgeous. It is connected to office space just on the other side of the building that is all completely modernized and really state of the art. The views are amazing. You go from there all the way down into the basement where we have recording studios. We're producing the materials that we're producing for our industry. So it has really got a little bit of everything. It's amazing. We have a vault. You have a vault.
What's in the vault?
The vault was where various things like the embossing plates were stored in the vault and then carried up on a spiral staircase to the production floor. There is some lore that the vault also held a safe at one point. So, but the vault is now this gorgeous conference room with beautiful skylights.
Circulation, scale, material selection, lighting, acoustics, and exhibit interfaces are all developed with disability access at the forefront, resulting in a building that aspires to be the most accessible museum in the world.
So when you go into a typical building, you're going to see the Braille that's required by ADA, you know, near a restroom, maybe in an elevator. If you're in a progressive organization, you might see a Braille label near a piece of artwork or near an installation. More often than not, you're going to see that in a limited scope. Maybe it's one installation, one gallery where they've really had this focus on diversity or equity or inclusive design, and they've put Braille up. Even in that instance, you very rarely have a one-to-one ratio of words to Braille. At the Dot Experience, every written word has a Braille companion. And so we don't think that's been done anywhere. So that's one. Additionally, every written word will be available through your device in a text-to-speech manner. So one of the tools that blind and low vision individuals use frequently is their phone or their tablet to use screen reader devices. So all of our material is being housed on a comprehensively, inclusively designed website that will allow for all of that to transition easily. Every piece of media includes not only captions, which is sometimes standard on pieces, but it will also have an ASL interpretation on screen. So everything that is being conveyed through the media piece is also being supported by an ASL interpreter that is right on the screen, always in the same location, so you can anticipate where those things will be every time they will be there. And then we're also embedding in all of the media descriptive methods that you can toggle on and off on some media like Netflix shows and things like that. You can toggle on and off your descriptive audio descriptions, which is not basically what is being said on the screen, but it's setting the stage for, you know, the background and scene transitions and those kinds of things. We are actually writing those into the actual audio and narration. And I think one of the most unique things for us is that, you know, we're not picking and choosing one of these things, another of these things in this area. You know, we are really embracing all of this as a full package. We've just approved the, Chris will laugh at this, but the flooring package recently got released, I think, I hope. And we've gone round and round Robin Hood's barn or whatever the saying is on that about, you know, how to create a flooring system that assists with navigation. If you're a cane user or a low vision individual, you know how to interpret the flooring as a way of helping you navigate the space.
Translating these ideas into a cohesive expansion required a deep exploration of how all the senses interact to sustain a fully accessible design ethos.
At one point in time, we were talking about building a new building, just going out into the further east end. And you know, that's really kind of the easy button for a project like this, because that's just not always the opportunity. We're an important member of the Clifton community, which is a smaller area of Louisville. We've been here since 1883. Our heritage is here. And so we made the decision to stay here. And of course, every project has a budget. And our budget has grown through the support of the board, but you still have a budget. And so, you know, what we've been running into is that this is the 16th edition. And obviously these editions came from all these different decades, like I mentioned, and most of these they came from decades where we were not emphasizing accessibility anywhere near to what we do today. And this presented navigational challenges to create, you know, a cohesive, intuitive flow to this space. For instance, the composition of the buildings had many level changes, different levels of floor, lack of, you know, what I would say are generous, accessible circulation to get everything to connect. We had floor height variances throughout these different additions. This doesn't allow us to have the generous ceiling heights or installation of modern mechanical systems to these tight clearances that we were working with. And because they were built in these different eras, we had different structural systems that they each had been constructed with. They've all been assessed and reinforced as necessary to support this building, but each was a challenge. I'd say one of the biggest challenges was really bringing daylight deep into the space of this existing building. Obviously, with our mission, light and making things more visible was very, very important. And so bringing daylight in was really a major, major challenge. New facade of the building being renovated for office space helps to include more light by having generous sized windows. But we've also gone with, you know, state-of-the-art lighting in the enter areas of the building to just try to address some of those challenges.
And Chris, add the fact that you had to balance bright lighting with the blind and low vision perspective on, you know, particularly the low vision perspective on spaces that are too bright.
Right. And I think the other thing is, you know, what we're dealing with and making this more inclusive is that what I've learned, and I've learned a lot, is that, you know, of the five senses, when one of them is impaired, the others are heightened. You know, so we have acoustical sensitivities throughout this building as well. So you have to be very aware of, you know, person that's blind and low vision is depending if they have a heightened sense. You got to be very careful with acoustics. So we're thinking about this throughout. So it's just, it is like a domino.
It is so gratifying and so challenging every day. I mean, I was just sitting here thinking, and Chris was talking about acoustics, you know, so from an attraction standpoint and from a multi-sensory standpoint, you think, okay, if you're trying to create the world's most inclusive museum, the stories are about blindness and the human experience. You know, you're trying to get this big meta message out there about making the world a better place for all people, all this, you know, people seeing disabled people differently, treating them differently, including them differently. You automatically say, okay, if I can't use my sight as a sense, then I'm going to use all these other things, right? And so you immediately default to sounds. And then when you talk to the people who are blind and low vision, who have been very integral into this process, as part of the project team, as part of our advisory teams, as part of our prototyping teams, immediately those individuals say, you cannot have too much tactile clutter or too much auditory clutter, because then I can't take in my space and then I'm overwhelmed. And so your immediate, you know, sort of solution from an attraction standpoint is to just amp up all the other senses, when what you really have to do is something almost completely opposite, which is to really control and contain and show restraint and real discipline and selective application of those kinds of things.
The construction phase is multi-tiered to accommodate the existing historical portions of the building while implementing the complex exhibition designs accurately.
Well, the construction was a two-phase project. We first had phase one, where we were renovating areas so that we could actually move employees into those newly renovated areas so that we could then begin renovating the area of the existing buildings that would house the new office spaces and the museum and begin the addition. The construction is going quite well. We've been at it for a few years now, and we'll be finished next year, probably summertime. We've made discoveries along the way that have, you know, shed light on the history of these 15 previous renovations. So many different things that I guess if I had more money, I probably would have scanned the whole building from top to bottom, soup to nuts. I mean, an X-ray scan. But I do think that the number of different existing conditions, you know, that's always a funny word in our industry. Existing condition. This thing is nothing but a bunch of existing conditions. And we've given it a lot of TLC, but haven't shied away from what it is and, you know, and what it was, really trying to, as I mentioned earlier, kind of honor what it was. But learnings on it, it's funny. We've reflect back the whole project team and says, what would I have done differently? I would say we probably would have tested some things a little more. Like in phase one, we got a little cute with some of our technology for water fountains and things of that nature that the employees didn't like as much as someone thought they might. Yeah, soap dispensers, like little things like that. It's like, never thought we'd spend so much time talking about something like that. So it did afford us a really good opportunity that because we phased it, that people were experimenting after phase one with things we just installed so that we could change them in phase two. So, you know, every job, you know, I think in college, my professor said, you know, a construction project is made up of, you know, 400,000 decisions. So I think in these days, it's more like 4 million, it seems.
Well, and with this project, Chris, I think too that we are at a phase in the project where we're having to teach more and more people about the commitment to inclusive design as well. I mean, I just had an email exchange today with folks who are helping us outfit the lunchroom, you know, and the first pass of furniture in the lunchroom included high top tables. And I was like, okay, well, that just isn't inclusive. You know, we can't have high top tables in this space. They may look nice, but we're not going to do that. And so, you know, I think at this moment, we're at that phase where it's like all of a sudden now we have more subs of the subs and more people who are, you know, trying to get this project to the finish line. And we're having to remind everybody about, we have to be disciplined. We have to think about that othering thing. And you don't know what that means. Oh, let's teach you what that means, you know, and really keep bringing more and more people into the field, which is hard and time consuming.
For Chris and Joe, the project has broadened the possibilities of creating truly accessible buildings and experiences, while providing a platform to share what they've learned and demonstrate what is possible.
I've had a complete paradigm shift. I was sensitive to disabilities through the lens of ADA as a professional. You know, my nephew is a nonverbal autistic growing young man, and so it's a part of my life. However, I had no real appreciation for the challenges that so many people face in this world. And I always knew buildings had to be accessible, but I didn't really understand this concept of being inclusive and that everybody should be included. It's not just about accessing, it's being included. And so I look at everything differently. I look at hotel, where I go and stay on a trip, I'm looking, why in the world would they have done that now? You know, I'm looking at things in a whole new set of lenses. You know, it's completely changed me. And I just had a blind spot for it. And so everyone should be included when we think about design. And I'm applying that mindset everywhere I go now. It's completely changed me.
I would answer in a very similar way with maybe a slight experiential angle to it. You know, I've been a CEO of science centers and museums. I've been a passionate advocate for including women in science. I've been a passionate advocate for early childhood education and literacy and economic access and, you know, all of these things. I never thought about disability in the way that I do today. And the idea of autonomous experiences, you know, giving someone the right to drive their own experience in a venue on their terms, you know, not have to ask somebody to read a sign for them, not have to have a curator pick the five things that they're able to touch on the touch tour, you know, just that whole sense of that humanity aspect of inclusion and experience, you know, and to be this far into my career and to have that kind of eye-opening educational experience and the chance to really change the world through this project and beyond is irreplaceable.
Chris Mosier at Solid Light highlights how three-dimensional printed replicas and interactive installations dissolve the conventional, quote, do not touch boundary. While surfaces, thresholds, and exhibit heights are calibrated to accommodate a wide range of bodies and abilities.
I think one of the misnomers is that in making something accessible or in thinking about inclusive design, it waters down or degrades others' experiences. I think it is just an additive process. So by making, you know, exhibits or, you know, experiences accessible and inclusive, it elevates everybody's experience. And so, like, an example of this is we made a pretty early determination with the printing house that artifacts and objects behind glass are largely inaccessible to non-sighted individuals, right? If you can't see it and it's behind glass, it's just not accessible. So we made a pretty concerted effort to find ways to bring objects and artifacts forward. And wherever possible from an archival standpoint, we want people to have the ability to touch it, to touch everything in the exhibits. Now you get some things that are like paper or they're fragile or they've got conservation standards that will not allow them to be touched. We've got to find ways to make those accessible. And on a lot of instances, we have determined that anything behind glass will get a 3D representation in front of glass. So if you take an object, what we're doing is we're doing a 3D scan of that object and then 3D printing that, displaying the 3D print of it in a tactile way so that anybody can touch it and feel the difference, you know, the form, the grooves, the texture. And, you know, that's being done with the mindset of accessibility inclusive design. But as soon as you bring that in front of the glass, you now provide a new way of engaging with that object to everybody. So kids, adults, anybody can touch that object. It's not there for low vision or blind individuals. It's there for everyone. And it's an additive experience for everyone. So it's been really interesting to like think about, you know, all these things that when we start with accessibility and inclusive design as the base, they really just elevate everybody's experience. And that's been, you know, something that just seems obvious, but you don't really think about it till you go through and kind of take it through the process and realize that, you know, this benefits everybody and, you know, should be celebrated for that. So there's lots of examples of that where, you know, we're finding ways to make things accessible and it just makes it an enhanced experience for everybody. And I think that's just, again, a kind of a cool key learning that we've taken out of this project is how has this changed our thinking about all of our future projects as well. And, you know, really taking that aspect and saying it's almost like 1 + 1 = 6 in certain ways.
The DOT experience extends beyond a single project. It positions architecture as an agent of cultural change, demonstrating how thoughtful, human-centered design can create environments that are not only accessible, but empowering. When the museum opens in 2026, it will demonstrate a built argument for inclusivity, proving that design rooted in empathy and collaboration can redefine the role of architecture in public life. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insight from our guests about the greater industry. I was curious what Joe and Chris thought the architecture profession can do better with their buildings to be more inclusive and welcoming.
Chris said, you know, think about inclusivity versus access. Because for me, that's been one of the big switches that has shifted in my head. You know, I think everybody thinks, well, if we give people access, it doesn't have to be the same kind of access, it just has to be access. But then you're segmenting. You're pushing somebody aside. You don't see them. You know, you literally are making them invisible because you're giving them another path they have to follow. You know, so mainstream, I mean, help people have the same experience. Think about all people getting through the main front door. Think about all people, you know, navigating the pathways. Don't think about what are all the ways I can add on to this to make it accessible, but how can I include everyone right from the very beginning? And I find that asking that question actually sometimes leads to simpler answers versus more complex ones.
It's a really interesting thing because, you know, the architect, the engineer wants to go to the tactics. What are the tactics to solve this problem? But it's much bigger than that. The tactics are going to change. As good as we've done in this job, there's going to be a better job one day. We hope because of our job, there are more better jobs. But it's really about culture. It's about how people think. You know, make the big thing the big thing. And if every architect doesn't look at accessibility and inclusivity as a standard that they have to meet because of code, if they look at it as, this is just what we do on every job, we're going to make this so everyone can enjoy it. I mean, like that, this industry will change. And so it is just a culture shift that everyone needs to start thinking about. And by the way, everyone's product is going to be so much better if they think about this.
You said something too a moment ago about fear and unfamiliarity. And I think that we got to get to that in some ways before we can get to the real shift, right? Because you have to get the architects to not be afraid to say, I wonder what a blind person would think. Let's go ask them. I wonder what someone in a wheelchair would think. Let's go ask them. Let's go get them into the conversation, because I can tell you that that was a learning curve on this project. Getting our architecture team, our exhibition team, you know, getting those folks at the table with individuals who are disabled, individuals who are blind, individuals who are deaf, that was itself a learning curve. And then once that familiarity happened, the culture started to form.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Joe and Chris. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires the mark that you want to leave on this world.
I think about this a lot. You know, our industry is a little depressing at times because every project has a start and we develop this team and then there's an end. And it is a bit depressing, right? Because that team that was together on that job will never be together again in that exact same form. But I've started to look at these as all unique opportunities to experience share in new ways. And so in my own little way, I'm just so lucky that this project, that I found this project, or this project found me, that I can take some of these learnings and to just help change other people's paradigms a little bit. I've had a paradigm shift. I want to try to make more people have a similar paradigm shift. And if I can do that, I think that's going to do something. I don't know what, but I'll start with what I can control. And I think that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. You know, I sometimes wonder, or maybe even worry, that my fearlessness and my fast pace do not do me any favors. However, you know, folks have said to me, how can you claim that this is going to be the world's most inclusive museum? And I say, how can I not? You know, if I don't think big, then I'm not going to do the job that I need to do to move something as far forward as I can. I don't need to be boastful, because I've already said today that, you know, I'm sure that we're not going to get everything perfect. But if nobody stood there and said, let's do this, you know, let's work on creating the world's most inclusive museum, and then let's move quickly and intentionally and with big, bold movements towards that goal, yeah, we wouldn't even get half as far. So I feel like I will have had a piece in getting us further down the road than we might have otherwise been, just by being a little fearless and dragging a few other folks along the way. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.